Chapter 11. Had burned itself out. It stood there, the extinguished beacon of his labors, a cold object of brass and porcelain, amongst the scattered pages of his notes, and small piles of books, a mere litter of blackened paper, dead matter without significance or interest. He got on his feet, and divesting himself of his cloak, hung it on the peg, going through all the motions mechanically. An incredible dullness, a ditch-water stagnation was sensible to his perceptions, as though life had withdrawn itself from all things, and even from his own thoughts. There was not a sound in the house. Turning away from the peg, he thought in that same lifeless manner that it must be very early yet, but when he looked at the watch on his table he saw both hands arrested at 12 o'clock. Ah! Yes, he mumbled to himself, and as if beginning to get roused a little he took a survey of his room. The paper stabbed to the wall arrested his attention. He eyed it from the distance without approval or perplexity, but when he heard the servant girl beginning to bustle about in the outer room with the samovar for his morning tea, he walked up to it and took it down with an air of profound indifference. While doing this, he glanced down at the bed on which he had not slept that night. The hollow in the pillow made by the weight of Alden's head was very noticeable. Even his anger at this sign of the man's passage was dull. He did not try to nurse it into life. He did nothing all that day. He neglected even to brush his hair. The idea of going out never occurred to him, and if he did not start a connected train of thought it was not because he was unable to think. It was because he was not interested enough. He yawned frequently. He drank large quantities of tea, he walked about aimlessly, and when he sat down he did not budge for a long time. He spent some time drumming on the window with his fingertips quietly. In his listless wanderings round about the table he caught sight of his own face in the looking glass and that arrested him. The eyes which returned his stare were the most unhappy eyes he had ever seen. And this was the first thing which disturbed the mental stagnation of that day. He was not affected personally. He merely thought that life without happiness is impossible. What was happiness? He yawned and went on shuffling about and about between the walls of his room. Looking forward was happiness, that's all, nothing more. To look forward to the gratification of some desire, to the gratification of some passion, love, ambition, hate too inevitably. Love and hate. And to escape the dangers of existence, to live without fear, was also happiness. There was nothing else. Absence of fear looking forward. H. The miserable lot of humanity, he exclaimed mentally, and added at once in his thought, I ought to be happy enough as far as that goes. But he was not excited by that assurance. On the contrary, he yawned again as he had been yawning all day. He was mildly surprised to discover himself being overtaken by night. The room grew dark swiftly, though time had seemed to stand still. How was it that he had not noticed the passing of that day? Of course, it was the watch being stopped. He did not light his lamp, but went over to the bed, and threw himself on it without any hesitation. Lying on his back, he put his hands under his head and stared upward. After a moment he thought, I am lying here like that man. I wonder if he slept while I was struggling with the blizzard in the streets. No, he did not sleep. But why should I not sleep? And he felt the silence of the night press upon all his limbs like a weight. In the calm of the hard frost outside, the clear-cut strokes of the town clock counting off midnight penetrated the quietness of his suspended animation. Again he began to think. It was 24 hours since that man left his room. Razumov had a distinct feeling that Alden in the fortress was sleeping that night. It was a certitude which made him angry, because he did not want to think of Alden, but he justified it to himself by physiological and psychological reasons. The fellow had hardly slept for weeks on his own confession, and now every incertitude was at an end for him. No doubt he was looking forward to the consummation of his martyrdom. A man who resigns himself to kill need not go very far for resignation to die. Halden slept perhaps more soundly than General T, whose task-weary work too was not done, and over whose head hung the sword of revolutionary vengeance. Razumov, remembering the thick-set man with his heavy jowl resting on the collar of his uniform, the champion of autocracy, who had let no sign of surprise, incredulity, or joy escape him, but whose goggle eyes could express a mortal hatred of all rebellion, Razumov moved uneasily on the bed. He suspected me, he thought. I suppose he must suspect everybody. He would be capable of suspecting his own wife, if Halden had gone to her boudoir with his confession. Razumov sat up in anguish. Was he to remain a political suspect all his days? Was he to go through life as a man not holy, to be trusted with a bad secret police note tacked onto his record? What sort of future could he look forward to? I am now a suspect, he thought again, but the habit of reflection and that desire of safety, of an ordered life, which was so strong in him came to his assistance as the night wore on. His quiet, steady, and laborious existence would vouch at length for his loyalty. There were many permitted ways to serve one's country. There was an activity that made for progress without being revolutionary. The field of influence was great and infinitely varied once one had conquered a name. His thought like a circling bird reverted after 24 hours to the silver medal, and as it were poised itself there. When the day broke he had not slept, not for a moment, but he got up not very tired, and quite sufficiently self-possessed for all practical purposes. He went out and attended 3 lectures in the morning. But the work in the library was a mere dumb show of research. He sat with many volumes open before him trying to make notes and extracts. His new tranquility was like a flimsy garment, and seemed to float at the mercy of a casual word. Betrayal. Why? The fellow had done all that was necessary to betray himself. Precious little had been needed to deceive him. I have said no word to him that was not strictly true. Not one word, Razumov argued with himself. Once engaged on this line of thought there could be no question of doing useful work. The same ideas went on passing through his mind, and he pronounced mentally the same words over and over again. He shut up all the books, and rammed all his papers into his pocket with convulsive movements, raging inwardly against Halden. As he was leaving the library, a long bony student in a threadbare overcoat joined him, stepping moodily by his side. Razumov answered his mumbled greeting without looking at him at all. What does he want with me? He thought with a strange dread of the unexpected which he tried to shake off lest it should fasten itself upon his life for good and all. And the other, muttering cautiously with downcast eyes, supposed that his comrade had seen the news of the PS executioner, that was the expression he used, having been arrested the night before last. I've been ill shut up in my rooms, Razumov mumbled through his teeth. The tall student, raising his shoulders, shoved his hands deep into his pockets. He had a hairless, square, tallowy chin which trembled slightly as he spoke, and his nose nipped bright red by the sharp air looked like a false nose of painted cardboard between the sallow cheeks. His whole appearance was stamped with the mark of cold and hunger. He stalked deliberately at Razumov's elbow with his eyes on the ground. It's an official statement, he continued in the same cautious mutter. It may be a lie. But there was somebody arrested between midnight and 1 in the morning on Tuesday. This is certain. And talking rapidly under the cover of his downcast air, he told Razumov that this was known through an inferior government clerk employed at the Central Secretariat. That man belonged to one of the revolutionary circles. The same, in fact, I am affiliated to, remarked the student. They were crossing a wide quadrangle. An infinite distress possessed Razumov, annihilated his energy, and before his eyes everything appeared confused, and as if evanescent. He dared not leave the fellow there. He may be affiliated to the police, was the thought that passed through his mind. Who could tell? But eyeing the miserable frost-nipped, famine-struck figure of his companion, he perceived the absurdity of his suspicion. But I, you know, I don't belong to any circle. He dared not say any more. Neither dared he mend his pace. The other, raising and setting down his lamentably shod feet with exact deliberation, protested in a low tone that it was not necessary for everybody to belong to an organization. The most valuable personalities remained outside. Some of the best work was done outside the organization. Then very fast, with whispering, feverish lips, the man arrested in the street was Alden. And accepting Razumov's dismayed silence as natural enough, he assured him that there was no mistake. That government clerk was on night duty at the secretariat. Hearing a great noise of footsteps in the hall and aware that political prisoners were brought over sometimes at night from the fortress, he opened the door of the room in which he was working, suddenly. Before the gendarme on duty could push him back and slam the door in his face, he had seen a prisoner being partly carried, partly dragged along the hall by a lot of policemen. He was being used very brutally. And the clerk had recognized Alden perfectly. Less than half an hour afterwards, General T arrived at the secretariat to examine that prisoner personally. "Aren't you astonished?" concluded the gaunt student. "No," said Razumov roughly, and at once regretted his answer. Everybody supposed Alden was in the provinces with his people. "Didn't you?" The student turned his big hollow eyes upon Razumov, who said unguardedly, "His people are abroad." He could have bitten his tongue out with vexation. The student pronounced in a tone of profound meaning, "So, you alone were aware." Dot and stopped. "They have sworn my ruin," thought Razumov. "Have you spoken of this to anyone else?" he asked with bitter curiosity. The other shook his head. "No, only to you." Our circle thought that as Alden had been often heard expressing a warm appreciation of your character. Razumov could not restrain a gesture of angry despair which the other must have misunderstood in some way, because he ceased speaking and turned away his black, lackluster eyes. They moved side by side in silence. Then the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.